Hi, we're the Delicates.
I'm Lee.
I'm Peg.
And I'm Dee.
We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s. We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the ballads, the rock tunes, the songs we all dance to, the girl groups and boy groups, solos and doo-wops. He talks to the stars of the stage shows and sock hops. We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
Meow, 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 meow.
Gentlemen, just for the fun of it, Linda, November.
Behind the glass in the studio, put on the headset, here we go. It's a tab, it's a Sprite, Pepsi, Green Coke is it. No matter which way you sing it, it's the same old you know. Let's run it down now, once or twice. Okay, we're gonna take one. Yeah, that was nice. Maybe just one more with a little more style. Take 28, could you add some style? I'm a studio singer, I do chicken rides. If you know what I mean, I'm a studio singer, I bring good things to life. But I'm terrible in the spotlight, never hear the sweet applause. And the band goes home before I even get there. Do I sing the best I'm able? A platinum voice without a label. The years I'm brought off, how they rack up. I'm the empress of the backup. Whoa, 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 whoa. You hear my voice the whole day long. Radio and TV, I tell it all in a song. This part is for you, make a low kill or two. You may know my voice, but my name, Linda who? I love to sing, so I'd never complain, but I sure wouldn't mind just a morsel of fame. Barry, Melissa, and Luther did fine. Sure would be nice if I were next.
It's taken me a while to figure out how to introduce the two people that I am going to introduce right now. They are very special to me, and I thought the best way to introduce Linda November, and that I believe is her real name, was to play that particular recording that she did as part of a show a few years ago called, very appropriately, November in May, because she did it in May, and she's November. Linda, are you there?
I am, sir. How are you?
I am fine, and I actually see you.
I don't see you, haha.
That's a good thing, because I have a face made for radio, and I even have a voice made for mime.
But I'm bummed.
But I see you, and I see a strange man. To your right, and to my left, and he's waving at the camera. And who is the strange?
He stays right. Very strange.
Very strange.
If you try to Google him, you're probably not going to find him unless you know how to spell his name, so we're going to straighten that out right now. It's pronounced Artie Schreck.
Just like the monster.
Just like the monster. But it's actually spelled, how do you spell your last name?
S-C-H-R-O-E-C-K.
S-C-H-R-O-E-C-K.
That's right.
And Artie Schreck is one of the top arrangers in the business. And I didn't tell you who Linda is, other than the fact that she's a studio singer. She's more than just a studio singer. She is a studio singer who, by the way, has recorded about 22,000 jingles. Did I get that right? 22,000?
Absolutely, you did.
Well, I get a gold star.
Well, it was documented, as a matter of fact, by, I think, ABC many, 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 many years ago.
When you were on the Regis Golden Show.
Right, when I was on Regis, and they asked me, and they came back with this number, and I went, it sounds right.
Well, we are going to, in this show, answer the question, who is Linda November? Who is Artie Schreck? We're going to talk about the unsung heroes, and I mean unsung heroes. Most of you out there think of hit records, and you think of singers, and you think of songwriters, but the story is more than that. There's backup singers, And there's arrangers. You've heard of producers. Producers get a lot of play, but arrangers don't get enough play. Is that right, Artie?
Yes, they don't.
Well said.
That's all you had?
That's all I had.
That's all he had. That's short and sweet.
That's him.
This is Ronnie, and talking today to Calvin Coolidge.
Yes. Arrangers get credit on the records and so forth, but nobody knows who they are because they're always the guy behind the scenes.
Right.
You know what Artie says sometimes? He gets so bugged at me sometimes. I say, oh, you know, he did this famous arrangement for this famous record, and Artie says, they think that he's arranging chairs. What is an arrangement? People don't understand.
We're going to find out. In fact, I am going to ask you some questions, Artie, about your craft in a few moments, but how about ladies first?
Sure.
Okay. And
he'll never get to talk.
Well, anyway, did I say who I am? I don't think I even said who I am. I am Ronnie Allen, and I'm...
Thank you.
And I am so pleased to be talking to two people I respect so very much. And we're going to now get started with the meat and potatoes of this interview. Now that we're done with the small talk, of course, we're not going to really be done with the small talk. This entire interview is probably going to be small talk. But Linda November, that is your real name?
Yes, it is. Linda Ellen November.
And Linda, you actually did a thing in the show. You were doing like a couple of songs from the Fantastics. Could you do a little bit of what you did with the Try to Remember, you know, with
Sure, I could try to remember. I'm Linda November.
That's it. That's what I wanted.
I thought Jones and Schmidt made a terrible mistake not writing that lyric.
It just fit in so well.
Well, I mean, how could you resist it? It's just perfect fodder, you know.
The name Linda November is a name not necessarily recognized until this show. Once we do this show, of course, you're going to be recognized by everybody around the world, Linda, but don't be nervous.
Sorry.
The world knows her already. She's a legend in her own mind and mine.
But so many people, hundreds, thousands, millions of people have heard you over the years without knowing who the heck you were.
Right.
Because every time they turned on their TV set or radio, they heard one of your jingles.
That's right.
And if they weren't listening to one of your jingles, they were probably listening to your voice as a backup singer on a hit record.
Precisely so.
So it's amazing. Your career did not start out as a singer, but you started out wanting to be something else. What was that?
A Jewish stripper. No, I'm joking.
Put it on.
No, I actually thought I would be a concert pianist. I started playing at the age of 4 by ear because I was too young to have ever known how to read music at that point. And I really wanted to be a concert pianist. And then one day I decided that I wanted to have long nails and I said, the heck with it.
I wanted to ask you, I mean, I've heard about playing piano by ear. Isn't it difficult to play those notes with your ear?
Yes, it's very difficult, especially your earrings get in the way.
So you had two problems. You had your earrings get in the way and your nails get in the way.
All right, now cut that out, Ronnie.
People know what we really mean by ear.
And I had perfect pitch. We didn't know it when I was a baby, but we subsequently found out when I was about 9 or 10, and that's why I played so well.
Perfect.
By ear. That's when they say that most people is because they have perfect pitch.
There's an old expression that nothing is perfect, and that's true. Nothing is perfect except Linda's pitch.
There are people in this world, I don't know what the percentage is, but those of us who have perfect pitch, and all it is a photographic memory. And if you are not a musician, then you don't know that you've got perfect pitch. You can just memorize stuff. But when you've played an instrument, and usually it's piano, and somebody plays a note and you're standing in the other end of the room and they play it and you say, or a chord, you know, like 5 or 6 notes together, if you will, and they say, what notes am I playing? And you say, oh, a C and F, a G flat and B flat or whatever. They say, oh dear, you've got perfect pitch. So, and to me, the world is a pitch. Our house is a pitch. The car is a pitch. It's amazing. I live my life by pitches, which is a very insane way to have to deal with things, but I can't help it because that's how I hear things,
Would you say that life is a pitch?
It is. I mean, the world is too. What a Hardy has a look on his eyes.
Life is a son of a...
Oh, a son of a... Okay. Moving right along. When you have perfect pitch, though, that could be difficult because if you're doing a studio session and any of the instruments is just slightly off, that probably drives you bananas.
Yeah, it's true.
What? Tell him about Burt Bacharach when he's to change key.
Oh, Burt Bacharach used to do this to me all the time. Because I read music like a son of a gun. I mean, I'm one of the best sight readers in this industry.
Right.
And we'd walk in and he'd say, oh, I had to change the key, so we're going to transpose it. Well, of course, I couldn't transpose it because when I see a note, I have to sing it. You tell me here's a B flat, let's say. I had to sing a B flat. And then we had to lower it a whole tone, so I had to sing an A flat. Well, no, I couldn't. So he had my part recopied specifically for me so I could read it in the key that we were doing it.
Right. Wow.
Bert used to walk in and they used to have such fun with me. And unbeknownst to me, he had in fact had my part recopied just so that I wouldn't be agonized because I would have to sit and rewrite it quickly. And I said, I'm not rewriting it. So you either do it in the original key or you know, then they would give me the part recopied. Because my teachers never taught me movable do, which they should have. So when there's a movable do, you can switch it and then you could read it in that key and or that clef. But in those days, they never bothered to teach me that. So unfortunately, when something happened like that, they had to just make sure that I had it in the right key.
Artie, do you have anything to add to what you just said?
Not necessarily. Most people who have relative pitch, which I have, they can look at music, as long as they're not playing it on the piano or anything, they can move the, like Linda said, the do. In other words, do is mostly C, but if they change the key, like say to B flat, do becomes B flat, and you can adjust that way. Linda reads the music. The rest of us don't have. We read the intervals, or the pitch of the intervals.
What I would like to do is play one of the songs that you sang at the November in May. Now, was that a single concert, or did you have an extended run with that?
I had done the show down at the ballroom in Manhattan. I had done it, I guess, I don't know, a weekend, I think, or no, like maybe a week or so. And then we decided to shoot it. We had shot it there, but we needed to shoot it professionally, so we did it at RCA Studios on, what was it, 44th Street, up on the 6th floor in their Studio C, where they have a very big stage.
Right.
We had to bring in lights. Of course, we had the sound because we had the booth there.
Right.
And then we invited an audience, and I invited, I don't know, about 40, 50 people. About 200 people showed up.
Yeah, it looks like much more than 40 or 50.
Yeah, I think it was over 300 people, and we had a quick call out for chairs. I mean, it was hysterical. We did a dress rehearsal that afternoon, and then we did the live performance. And it was something that we decided we wanted to have for... Prosperity.
Good word.
So that's why we did that.
Right. And one of the songs is a song called Nanny Nanny. What's the full title of that?
It's Time for My Fix.
It's Time for My Fix. It's kind of funny because I wrote you in an email. I thought it was something called Pretty Little Garden.
Pretty Little Garden, you said.
Yeah. And then you wrote back and you said, Nanny, Nanny, it's time for my fix. And I thought you were talking to me.
I realized that.
That's the title of the song.
It starts, Pretty Little Garden, Pretty Little Garden. That's why you said Pretty Little Garden.
Yeah.
Pretty little garden, pretty little flowers, pretty little spot to while away the hours. How the time goes by, my, it's 6:30. Nanny, oh, Nanny, it's time for my fix. Everything in nature goes its little way. The birds are eating berries and the cows are chewing hay. The bee's on the rosebud, that's where he wants to feed, you see. The bee does not. Like I love the weed. All the little flowers are flying in the blue. And when my nanny gets here, I'll be flying too. So, honey nanny darling, honey nanny sweet, hark, I hear the patter of my nanny feet. Here comes nanny now with my mild morphine. Life is simply great when you're a sweet 16.
Oh, I love that one. That's so cute. Let's hear it again. No. Like, we got to do more shows, so we would have to hear other stuff as well. Boy, you have done so many things. We want to point out that you have a Richard Rodgers connection. Could you tell me in 10 seconds or less what that Richard Rodgers connection was?
What are you, for sugar me, 10 seconds or less?
I'm kidding. Give you at least 30 seconds.
I went to Broadway auditions, and they were always cattle calls. You had to have an equity card in order to go to an equity audition. So I would go to all these auditions, and I was kind of a fat, ugly kid as opposed to being a glamour queen nowadays. I would be, they take one look at me and say, next. And so I went to my uncle, Saul. He was a doctor. He was a podiatrist. And this guy came in who happened to be the entertainment critic for the Dallas Morning News. And he said, Linda, let's sing him a song. So the guy's in the whirlpool and his feet are being massaged. And I'm singing, love her when I'm there. The guy says, wait, I'm making a call. Next thing I know, I'm in a limousine. Make a long story short, I go to Richard Rodgers' house, and they send me upstairs to this beautiful apartment house in the penthouse, and this man is standing there when the doors open, the elevator doors, and he said, how do you do? And I went, oh my God, it's Richard Rodgers. I was a child. I was 16 or 17 or something. And Dorothy Rodgers, his wife, came out, and he said, I understand you are spectacular. What would you like to sing for me? What shall I play for you? I said, oh, I'll play for myself. I said this to Richard Rodgers, like a little yutz that I was. And he said, you're going to play for yourself. I said, yeah. What would you like to sing? I said, your wonderful song that you wrote with Mr. Lorenz Hart, Lover. He said, and what key do you do it in? And I said, D, the original key that's in your Rodgers and Hart song. But he said, is that so? Please, I'm intrigued. Have a seat. I sat down at this gorgeous Steinway piano. And I proceeded to play verbatim what he had written musically and vocally and the lyrics. And I finished. She said, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I've got to call your mother. The next thing he knows, he's speaking to Eleanor November, my precious, beloved mother. And she says, oh, yeah, sure, you're pulling my leg. Who did you guys? He said, Eleanor, this is Richard Rodgers. This is my phone number. Phone me back if you don't believe me. I'm not a masher. And so my mother called back, and he said, your daughter is my next protege, and da-da-da-da-da. So they had to do a whole number on me to make me into somebody that looked the part as well. And from there, the rest was history.
Aren't you glad you didn't ask for a long story?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. I mean, there's still more to the story.
And that involves a well-known Broadway show.
He sent me to all auditions at his protege, and they said, Miss November, you sing beautifully, you read the script beautifully, but you're a bit overweight, or the glasses don't work, your hair's too dark, you look too Jewish. And this happened constantly, and finally he said, we're going to remake this kid. So they did. I had my nose fixed, and I got contact lenses, and I lost about 70 pounds, and they dyed my hair and straightened my hair. And so I went to my first audition after this extraordinary transformation, and it was Fiddler on the Roof. And they said, Miss November, you're magnificent, but you don't look Jewish enough. And I said, my old nose is in a jar. I can run downtown and get it. And that was that. So after I went home and did my Sarah Hartburn, tried to take two baby bear aspirins and end it all, then they sent me to do an industrial at the Coliseum for the Ford Motor Company. And there it was the famous Cy Coleman and Carolyn Lee, people who wrote Witchcraft and 900 other brilliant songs. And Dick Williams, Andy's brother, my dear friend, still alive and kicking. And Ray Charles of the Ray Charles Singers, who's just as much alive and kicking with Perry Como. And Phil Ramone. And they said, oh, you're a star. I said, no. I just want to be a group singer. So they said, if that's what you want to be, fine. Ray Charles said, I'll have my contractor call you. And Dick Williams called me for a job. And the next thing you know, I was doing record dates. And I was singing with a group of 25 of the greatest musician singers in the world. And it was the most exciting thing for me. And they're going to pay me to read music and sing with these people. And then Ray Charles put me down on the fourth chair with Lillian Clark, who is now gone. She was married to Cy Oliver. She was one of the Clark sisters.
And right around that time, your voice was heard on a Frank Sinatra record.
The World We Knew.
Let's play a little bit of that recording called The World We Knew and listen to what's called, is it a soprano obbligato?
Yes, it's called an obbligato, exactly.
Over and over, I keep going over the world. Once when you inconceivable, that unbelievable world we knew when we two were in love.
Ray Charles said, who is that soprano? That's magnificent. That's unbelievable.
Yes.
It's the hippest soprano I ever heard. So somebody said, it's Linda November. And I walk into the next date with Ray Charles, and he says to me, why didn't you tell me that was you? I said, I don't know, you didn't ask. He said, what the hell are you doing in the fourth chair? I said, you put me there. And so he moved me up to the lead chair.
How many years did you spend as part of the Ray Charles Singers?
Well, you know, we were all freelance singers. We were all hired on a job-to-job basis. I'm sure you know that,
right,
Ronnie.
Even though it was the Ray Charles Singers, you were studio singers, really.
We were, exactly. So the point is, you know, there were other singers. They wouldn't necessarily all be the same people. Somebody was sick, somebody died, somebody was on vacation. So you had a roster of singers that you would use. I worked with Ray from 62, 63 to probably 67, and then we would do the Como Show, the Kraft Music Hall.
Your voice is on the record, Love Me With All Your Heart. This was a very big hit for the Ray Charles Singers. One of those Ray Charles Singers is Linda November. Ray Charles Singers and Love Me With All Your Heart, and I have a Ray Charles Singer right here. That's Linda November. And while this was going on, of course, you got into doing other things.
The rest was history, and then the first jingle call and what the money was, and my mother said, find out how we do more of these. And it took me 7 years to become an overnight success, and I sang 22,000 commercials in 32 years, made over $100, and had a phenomenal career. Before I sang jingles exclusively, I did record dates with every megastar you can mention.
You sent me a list of the top 25 commercials that you have done, and you could just do a little impromptu version of some of these. Is that okay?
Ronnie, I thought that you were going to let me sing all 22,000 of them, and then we'd have cake and coffee.
Oh, okay. Well, give me another year, and we'll finish the show.
Okay, sure.
Now, David Letterman only has a top 10 list. We got a top 25 list. We're out lettering Letterman here.
Okay.
The number 25 commercial, ladies and gentlemen, is the Prudential commercial. You'd sing a little bit of...
Get a piece of the rack.
Good. Okay. Number 24 is Exxon. Get a piece of the Exxon.
The well is running smooth and silent. Exxon, Exxon. That was it. Running smooth and silent. Running with the tiger.
This is much better than having the original commercial. We have Linda here doing them live.
Yeah, and try to dig them up. They're all on the 7.5 IPS or 15
I know.
Play them now.
But you've heard them, and I worked for AT&T, by the way, over 30 years. AT&T is kind of close to my heart, and number 23 on your list is AT&T. Do you remember what you did for AT&T?
Reach out and touch someone. Reach out, call up and just say hi. That was it.
Great. Oh, everybody knows that one.
Sure do.
Rolling right along, we get to number 22, and we're doing like five of these at a time, and we're going to kind of split up the show that way. And number 22 is Greyhound.
Go Greyhound and leave the driving to us. Go Greyhound and leave the driving to us.
Cha-cha-cha. That was great. No, I just that's part of... That's part of Ronnie Allen's arrangement. I just felt that there should be a...
Keep it in.
Number 21 is Kraft.
And America spells cheese. K-R-A-F-T. Kraft.
Okay. So that's number 25 through number 21. A lot of people don't know that you were actually, even though you were never billed as such, but you and I believe Tony Wine and another singer, you were actually the original Dawn.
Yes, we were. We were in the studio and we were called to be Dawn. Well, it wasn't Dawn, it was just Tony Orlando. Then they decided to call it Dawn, and then they decided to go on the road. And, of course, Tony and I were doing wonderfully well in the business, and we weren't about to go on the road and sing stuff.
But the first hit was Candida, and it's you and Tony Wine. Was there another girl on that
show? I don't remember. I don't know if Robin Grion was on it or one of the guys came in, Alan. I don't remember.
But it was you and Tony Wine on this record.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's listen to a little bit of this, and I love this record. This may be my personal favorite Dawn record. This is Candida.
The stars won't come out if they know that you're about, 'cause they couldn't match the glow of your eyes. Window, who am I? Just an ordinary guy, trying hard to win me first prize. Oh, Candida, we could make it together. The further from here, girl, the better. Where the air is fresh and clean. Candida, just take my hand.
When that record came out, the billing on the record just said Dawn. Tony Orlando's name was not on the record because he was trying initially to hide the fact that he was doing it, as if nobody knows that's Tony Orlando, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, you know that Tony Wine wrote Candida.
And that was the other Tony. A lot of Tonys involved.
It's you and I.
Tony Wine wrote Candida, Tony Orlando sang it. And to prove that Dawn was not going to be a one-hit wonder, you did a song called Knock 3 Times, and you and Tony were on this record, too.
That's right, yeah. That was Levine and Brown.
Levine and Brown wrote that one, and we're going to listen to a little bit of that one. This was a number one hit, and it features on that particular record Tony Wine and Linda November.
Too.
It's even more fun when they make number one, like that one did.
Now, we didn't make any money on that, we just get paid for the session. Those days, you never got any royalty.
And by the way, what started out as a kind of anonymous group became a real group shortly thereafter when singers Thelma Hopkins and Joyce Vincent joined Tony Orlando. They became Dawn, or Tony Orlando and Dawn, and they did touring, personal appearances, etc., etc. But it all began with you and Tony and Tony and another girl and probably another guy and whoever was in the studio at that time for those first two records, Candida and Knock 3 Times. I am Ronnie Allen, and I am talking to two very wonderful people, wonderfully talented people as well, Linda November and Artie Schreck. Linda, you were not born in November, were you?
My father, Julius November, was born in November, but I was born in October.
Artie, we're going to move to you right now. Speaking of Mr. Sinatra, you wrote a song for Frank Sinatra called Here's to the Band. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Some friends of mine came to my house and said, we have this song called Here's to the Musicians, and we'd like to get it to Frank Sinatra because he always gives credit to the musicians, the arrangers, and the songwriters when he performs. And it would be a great idea for him to do a song like that, giving credit. But it was a kind of a Barry Manilow kind of song, and I said to them, Frank Sinatra probably wouldn't want to do a song like this. He'd done a couple of songs like that, but he probably wants to do something. When you think of musicians and him giving credit to musicians, he would probably like to do it as a swing tune, like all the records he made for Capitol, I Got You Under My Skin and stuff like that, even New York, New York. So I said, and I think Here's to the Musicians is a little bit too much for to say, and it would be hipper if he said, Here's to the Band. So I said, give me your lead sheet and everything, and I'll take a look at it. Well, in 24 hours, walking along, going in between record dates or jingle dates and stuff like that, I actually came up with a lyric and a song called Here's to the Band as a swing song. And I presented to the two of them, and they flipped out over it, and we got it to Sinatra. And Sinatra had it in his briefcase for about 2 years, and finally a publisher, Al Gallego, heard the song. He was my song publisher. And he said, wow, this is something. So we called Nancy Sinatra and had her come over to the house. And Nancy heard the song. She says, I got to call my dad right away. She goes, you got to do the song. And Sinatra said, I got it with me. I said, please listen to it and record it as soon as you can. It's another My Way. It's another whatever, New York, New York. He finally recorded it. I was at the session. And that's how it went down. William B. Williams was the first guy to present it on the radio from WNEW.
Now, who were your co-writers?
Alfred Natoli and Sharman Howe.
And this is that great song, The Chairman of the Board, or Old Blue Eyes, Francis Albert Sinatra. Here's to the Band.
Dedicate this song to all of them. I've sung with the best, and I've had it all. I've gone from neighborhood saloons to Carnegie Hall. I've been down and out, and I've been in demand, but I wouldn't have made it without them. Here's to the band. Those magical notes, those musical pearls, I've sung with all the counts, the dukes, the kings and the earls. And the experience, I have to say, was grand. But I wouldn't have made it without them. Here's to the band. I wouldn't have made it without.
One thing always impressed me about Frank Sinatra is how he did give credit. Among many things that was special about Frank Sinatra, that was one of the most special things. We're going to talk in a few moments about arranging records, and we're going to hear a fantastic arrangement that you did, Artie, for Liza Minnelli on Teach Me Tonight at one of her shows. But before we get to that, let's get back to Linda. We're going to hear a couple of marriage songs or wedding songs or whatever. I think you know what's coming up. There's a song by Rodgers and Hart, and this is from your December in May, and people just have to hear this one.
November in May.
Did I? Should I leave that in or should I take it? I said December in May. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you and good night. We just lost her. No. What an embarrassment. November in May. Listen, I got the May part correct. You know, actually, I'm doing this in a special way, and I'm actually seeing them on my screen here, and your husband just walked out. I guess he just got disgusted with me. All right.
He went out to have a pop or two.
Oh, okay. How about November and January? Tom Lehrer did a song called Rickety Tickety Tin, which is kind of a sick little song, and Rodgers and Hart wrote a song that some people could say is kind of a sick little song, but it's all in fun. It's absurd, right?
No, it's brilliant, and you know, it's over 70-something years old now. It was one of the most brilliant things that Larry Hart ever wrote, I think. I mean, it was absolutely. I just think the brilliance of his idea. You know, I killed all these people to keep my love alive.
I've been married, and often I've sighed. I'm never a bridesmaid, I'm always the bride. I never divorce them, I haven't the heart. Yet remember these sweet words, till death do us part. I married many men, a ton of them, because I wasn't true to none of them. Because I bumped off every one of them to keep my love alive. Sir Paul was frail, he looked a wreck to me. At night he was a horse bed next to me. So I performed an appendectomy to keep my love alive. Sir Tom is having insomnia. He couldn't sleep at night. I bought a little arsenic. He's sleeping now all right. Sir Philip played the harp. I cut the thing. I crowned him with a top to bust the thing. And now he plays where harps are just the thing to keep my love alive. I thought Sir George had possibilities, but his dissertation made me ill at ease. And when I'm ill at ease, I kill at ease to keep my love alive. Sir Charles came from a sanatorium and yelled for drink in my emporium. I mixed one drink, he's in memoriam.
To keep my love alive. And that was from, what was the show?
A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, and I suppose it was 1940-something.